Good morning. Thomas Eunice Pengenot here. Convey some of the things in today's Waterloo Courier for Sunday, June 21st. Today's high should be in the middle 80s, supposed to be partly cloudy, and tonight's low at about 66 or mid-60s. This will be, 1 p.m. on Sunday afternoon, June 21st, and first, second day of summer or so, longest sunlight days of the year. Eunice is here to read something on the front page of the Courier. What do you have there?
Hope through hemp. Unemployed military veterans will be among the first Iowa farmers to plant a hemp crop this year and eventually will train others on their techniques if Randy Hastedt's plan comes to fruition. As the CEO of U.S. Veterans Alliance, a group so new it doesn't yet have a functioning website, he was born in Waverly, has lots of plans to help veterans like himself, a third-generation U.S. Navy CB. Those plans, he said, include buying an old Las Vegas hotel to house homeless vets and staffing it with a psychologist as well as helping vets in another capacity in Texas. We have an intricate business plan in which we want to be able to move vets around to places where they feel comfortable and also establish helping them figure out what they want to do when they come back, he said. One of those plans, now that he's one of the first licensed hemp growers in Iowa, is to come back to Iowa and help transition veterans like himself into employment and entrepreneurship. Eventually, those veterans can train other farmers to grow hemp as well. This fell so in line with our business plan. It is incredible, he said. He and his employees are working with an Oregon-based agronomist via Zoom and meetings to learn the ins and outs of preparing the soil and planting hemp seed on 30 acres outside of Fairbank. About a week ago, they loaded up the planter and put those seeds in the ground. In 3 to 4 months, the crop should reach maturity, at which point the hemp will be sold for flour and biomass. He said the final product will be sold to a Washington-based CBD company, Everyday Natural Products, and likely be used in CBD elixirs or oils. I'm learning this as I go because I'm new to this too, he said. Ultimately, he wants to use hemp farming as one way unemployed vets can find meaningful work and eventually pass on their knowledge to other farmers looking to transition some of their own acres to hemp. Having roots in Iowa and knowing people in Iowa made it a lot easier, he said. Seeing it grow and develop is really solidifying the purpose we started. Hopefully, this is going to provide a change for everybody.
Cedar Falls Applebee's employees walk off job. General manager out of job after employees allege racist behavior. The general manager of a chain restaurant is no longer employed there after multiple employees walked off the job in protest of what they say was her racist behavior. She operated the Applebee's restaurant in Cedar Falls, according to John Rolf, president of Thrive Restaurants Group in Wichita, Kansas, which owns more than 40 Applebee's restaurants and several Carlos O'Kelly restaurants around the Midwest, including Waterloo and Cedar Falls. Multiple employees of the Applebee's restaurant and Facebook posts and messages to the Courier said up to 17 people walked off the job and planned a demonstration Tuesday night after the manager was later fired. Rolf would only confirm a demonstration closed the restaurant Tuesday evening and declined to disclose personnel issues, including whether the manager was fired, but he said allegations of racism have been investigated. This issue is just incredibly serious. This issue we just take incredibly seriously and have for a long time, Rolf said. The manager, whom the courier has decided not to name, did not immediately return a message seeking comment. One employee of the Waterloo Applebee's, where she had apparently been working in preparation to take over the Cedar Falls restaurant, said several black employees expressed concern at comments she had made during her time there. That employee didn't want to go on record for the fear of losing her job, losing their job. The incident of a guest making a general comment about there being too many racial epithet here happened shortly after opening to 50% capacity, the employee said. She did hear this comment, but did not speak up for employees and other black guests in the restaurant. The server was black as well. When employees complained to other managers, they were told to stick it out, as the general manager would be transferred within a few weeks, the employee said. Other employees noted that they had heard a cook wore an "I can't breathe" shirt to work and was told to take it off, and that 17 more employees had walked out in protest after the manager allegedly told employees they were banned from discussing the Black Lives Matter movement. Our store in Waterloo has now asked its employees to help out over there with picking up shifts because they are so understaffed, something I personally refused to do due to prior interactions with them myself, said another Waterloo employee who is black. Dave Phillips, Thrive's director of marketing, said the company became aware of the allegations through a manager above her, Deacon Gardner, then began seeing allegations on Facebook and finally heard about the employees walking off the job. Phillips disputed some of the allegations, however, saying the company investigated. The company's investigation suggested it was not a customer that used the N-word, but that a theoretical situation was brought up in an employee meeting. He also said the employee wearing a Black Lives Matter shirt was asked to change into a blank shirt as per company policy, and that employee complied. I don't think there's a company out there that's been leaned into this more than we have, Phillips said. Rolf said he wanted his company to encourage the conversation taking place across the country in recent weeks. We have friends and team members that work for us from many different communities with many different experiences from us, he said. It's important for us to listen to those experiences and move this company forward.
Ernst Greenfield backers trade charges over ethics. Iowa Democrats and special interest groups say Senator Joni Ernst has put a for sale sign on our democracy with fundraising practices that show a disregard for the law. They point to fundraisers for Ernst Jobs, Opportunities and New Ideas PAC, Joni PAC, which they charge violate rules on coordination between campaigns and so-called dark money groups that can raise unlimited amounts of money and do not have to disclose the names of donors. The person handling the Joni PAC fundraiser also works for Iowa Values, a political nonprofit supporting Ernst's re-election, they state. Iowa Republican countered with charges that Ernst's Democratic challenger, Des Moines real estate executive Teresa Greenfield, displaced mom-and-pop businesses to make way for Aldi store that city officials later rejected. The back-and-forth over those issues has escalated in the contest that observers say could tip the balance of power in the U.S. Senate. The Cook Political Report, Inside Elections, and the Center for Politics Crystal Ball Rate race the lean Republican. Recent polling shows Greenfield slightly ahead of Ernst, but within the margin of error of the polls. Ernst's approval rating has dropped among Iowa voters, which Democrats tie to voter disapproval of the Ernst campaign coordination with Iowa Values, despite campaign finance rarely being identified as a priority when voters are polled. Dark money abuse. The allegations are a continuation of charges Democrats made earlier about Ernst campaign and Iowa Values. Political nonprofits are common and legal, as long as they keep their activities separate from the candidates they support and have some social welfare agenda in addition to political goals. In Ernst's case, says Tiffany Muller, president of Citizens United, which has endorsed Greenfield, the coordination between Ernst and Iowa Values is not only illegal but shameless. Ernst's dark money arrangement stands out for its brazen disregard for the law, Muller said during a call with the Iowa Democratic Party. The formation and coordination with his dark money group is a serious breach of public trust and campaign finance laws. It's the clearest instance of dark money abuse I've seen from an Iowa politician. Nothing short of plain as day political corruption, Iowa Democratic Party Chairman Mark Smith said. Old claims. The Republican Party of Iowa responded that N Citizen United and Democrats are recycling old claims reported by the Associated Press in 2019 in an effort to divert attention from Greenfield's business record and ethics problems. The party and the Ernst campaign have called on Greenfield to explain her company's displacement of small businesses to make way for the German-grown grocery chain, Aldi. Her development plan was rejected by Windsor Heights, but after the business had been forced out. Aaron Britt, spokesman for the Republican Party of Iowa, said Greenfield also is the subject of a Federal Election Commission ethics complaint for coordinated illegal aids with corporate-funded dark money groups. The allegation is the Greenfield campaign posts video and messages in the public domain that the Senate Majority Super PAC then used in ads or fundraising appeals. Action unlikely. It is uncertain, perhaps unlikely, that the IRS and FEC will hear or render decisions on the complaints over Ernst's coordination with Iowa Values and Greenfield's coordination with the Senate Majority PAC. The FEC often splits among party lines, and the IRS has shown little interest in regulating dark money groups. Former FEC legal counsels are split on whether the Ernst-Iowa Values relationship is illegal. One called it really questionable, while the other viewed the fundraising as permissible. In the past, the FEC has found that sharing information, as Greenfield's campaign is alleged to have done, was not sufficient to violate coordination standards. Excuse me. That's it. That was the end of that article.
Crash and cause end and arrest. Chase crash and end and arrest. Waterloo, a Cedar Rapids man was detained after he allegedly tried to run from a crash Thursday afternoon. Wayne Malik Black, 22, of Cedar Rapids, was arrested Thursday near the intersection of Dane Street and Mullen Avenue and charged with felony eluding police, felony interference with official acts while carrying a firearm, and felony possession of a firearm by a felon, as well as three misdemeanors for reckless driving, driving while license suspended, and possession of marijuana. According to police, Black fled from a traffic stop around 3:30 p.m. Thursday, then crashed into other vehicles in the front of RPM Motor Company on East Mullen Avenue. He then allegedly ran off and was detained by police a block away from East First Street. No serious injuries were reported in the collisions. Next, Cedar Falls man arrested in burglary assault. A man was arrested at a North Cedar apartment building after police say he was burglarized and assisted residents after then fled from the police for nearly 2 hours. Cedar Falls police were called to 2308 Center Street in Cedar Falls at 4 a.m. Saturday for an assault in progress, according to a report. When they arrived, they found two injured victims who named Kane Michael Swalla, 25, as their attacker. One woman was taken to the hospital for her injuries. Police, as well as deputies from Blackhawk County Sheriff's Office, searched for Swalla for nearly 2 hours before finding and arresting him just before 6 a.m. It was unclear where Swalla was found. Swalla was charged with felony first-degree burglary, felony assault while participating in a felony, and felony domestic abuse assault, as well as third-degree criminal mischief and interference with official acts, both misdemeanors. He was also arrested on a warrant for willful serious injury. Swalla was taken to the Blackhawk County Jail on a $70,000 bond. And Clarksville man gets prison in meth case. A Clarksville man was sentenced to 5 years in prison after he attempted to get rid of methamphetamine by throwing it into a wood-burning stove in 2019. Drew Johnson, 38, pled guilty January 8th to the charge in federal court in Sioux City Thursday and was sentenced to 60 months in prison. Clarksville police and Butler County Sheriff's deputies were at Johnson's home at 503 West Ware Street to execute a search warrant February 25th of 2019, when Johnson pulled up and ran into the house. A struggle broke out when an officer attempted to stop him, and the scuffle worked its way down the stairs, ending near a wood-burning furnace, according to court records. Johnson threw a bag into the furnace, and authorities were able to retrieve the bag and tested positive for meth, records state. Officers also found marijuana and glass pipes while searching the home. Records show Johnson has two prior convictions for domestic assault as well as multiple theft convictions. Next item, Cedar Falls man arrested for burglary. Police arrested a man they say broke several windows and kicked in a door of a woman's residence as well as damaged her vehicle in a early morning burglary. James Lee Altman Jr., 36 years old, was arrested just before 3:30 a.m. Saturday and charged with second-degree burglary and second-degree criminal mischief, both felonies. Altman Jr. was booked into Blackhawk County Jail and remained there Saturday morning on a no-bond hold for the criminal mischief charge. Cedar Falls police say they were called to 708 Main Street just before 3:15 a.m. for the burglary in progress. Once there, they met with a resident who identified Altman Jr. and said he had broken several windows, kicked the door into her residence, and severely damaged her car, which had been parked in her driveway, according to police. The woman said Altman Jr. had fled on foot. Police detained him a short time later. It was unclear where.
Today is also Father's Day, so happy Father's Day to those of you. Here's a little tidbit on Father's Day. June 19 was chosen for the first Father's Day celebration in 1910. Father's Day has been celebrated annually since 1972, when President Richard Nixon signed the public law that made it permanent. There are an estimated 72.2 million number of fathers in the United States. 25 million fathers living in married couple family groups with children younger than the age of 18. The total expected spending on Father's Day spending is expected to reach an all-time high of $17 billion this year. Father's Day spending has grown 70%, approximately $7.6 billion since 2009. Is what you want me to read next? Here. Starting a new chapter, Fig and Frolic closes its doors, but the urge to create will continue. Fig and Frolic owners Jenny Bovers and Becky Hyatt transformed their passion for junking into a thriving hive of creativity and inspiration, and a place to buy for charming, quirky, and vintage home decor and recycled and repurposed objects. Fig and Frolic opened in late July 2013 in cozy quarters at 600 Baltimore Street in Waterloo. It quickly became a destination for shoppers who fell in love with their whimsical style. It outgrew the space, and in 2014, the mother-daughter duo moved into a new digs at 114 West Fifth Street in Cedar Falls. 7 years later, the popular shop closed its doors Saturday. Although the COVID-19 pandemic impacted their business, as it did nearly every small business in Iowa, the decision to close was simply because Bovers and Hyatt want to pursue other interests. It's been a dream come true, one that we brainstormed for many years. We really thought it would be fun to create a store like this and help people make a home that they love. That's always been our passion and our objective, and our days have been filled with a lot of satisfaction. But now it's time to find new adventures, said Hyatt, who retired from Viridian Credit Union. She has a degree in home economics with an emphasis in interior design. Our favorite part of the business has always been the creativity. We like to change things up. Life's short, and we have a bucket list of things we want to do. I want to go to the Paris flea market in France. Closing was a tough decision, said Bovers, who is also a nurse. It's been super hard. I was stewing on it for a while, she said. I got a new job about a year ago that demands more of my time and brain power, and COVID-19 was the straw that broke the camel's back. It put things into perspective for me. I've missed family events, missed being at home and doing the things that I love. I loved the shop, but now I'm ready to once again do the things that inspire me to open a shop in the first place. The hardest part has been saying farewell to their customers, Hyatt said. Bovers agreed. It makes me feel sad to hear people talking about how sad they are about our closing, but I'm also proud and very happy that we've been an inspiration to people, she explained. Hyatt and Bovers enjoy working together. When the doors first opened, Fig and Frolic was at the forefront of junking, finding objects along the roadside at flea and junk markets, garage sales, estate auctions, and farm sales, and reclaiming and repurposing them in inventive ways as home decor. The owners had already won followers as Junk Revised, and their fans were thrilled that Bovers and Hyatt were finally opening a store that celebrated their style of home decor and accessorying. The Fig and Frolic owners have squeezed a lot into these 7 years. They've taught dozens of how-to classes and workshops, organized a mural painting on the Cedar Falls Parkade, and participated in numerous community activities. Bovers also founded Create Her with a Katie Burke of Hatchlings and Hens, 3-day creative retreats that brought HGTV stars like Mallory Raspberry to Cedar Falls and featured a variety of maker projects and special events. They plan to hang on to Fig and Frolic name and identity. I don't know what's on the horizon for us, but maybe we'll do online sales or teach classes or workshop on occasion. My plan is to sit still for a while and decide which avenue to pursue, Bovers said. In the meantime, Bovers is booked to stage a wedding in October and has bookings to create vignettes in store windows. Mother and daughter still plan to decorate a tree for the annual Festival of Trees and will continue writing their quarterly craft column for CV Home and Garden magazine.
Waterloo considers easing employee residency limits. Proposed policy change would allow many city workers to live farther away from town. Waterloo City Council members will be asked Monday to ease the current policy requiring critical municipal employees to live within 10 miles of City Hall. The proposed policy would require police officers, public workers, public works employees, and forestry staff to live within 30 miles of City Hall. Firefighters have already been exempted from the restrictions. A majority of the council members last week indicated they favored expanding the residency zone at the request of department heads, who said the current limit is more restrictive than Iowa's other large cities and hurts recruitment efforts. A policy adopted in 1981 required workers deemed as critical, essentially those who may need to be recalled in emergency situations, to live within a 30-minute drive of the city. It was revisited in 2003 to a 20-mile radius of City Hall. The current policy with a 10-mile radius was adopted in September 2006 and stands as one of the most restrictive in the state. It is illegal under Iowa law for cities to force civil service employees to live in the city where they are employed, but the courts have agreed cities can set reasonable residency requirements for critical workers. The meeting is scheduled for 5:30 p.m. Monday in the city council chambers in City Hall. Some council members will be attending electronically, and residents wishing to comment on items are encouraged to do so via email to the city clerk's office or contact the city clerk to get login information for to participate in the meeting by phone or Zoom meeting. Other scheduled council business include a 4:10 p.m. work session to discuss racial equality and social justice toolkit to review city policies, resolutions, and ordinances for potential adverse effects on certain groups in the community. That will be followed by a 4:40 p.m. work session to discuss a Ridgeway Avenue traffic study. Another short item, low-cost pet vaccines offered. The community may participate in a low-cost, low-income vaccine clinic for dogs and cats next Sunday at the Cedar Bend Humane Society Adoption Center. Vaccinations are by appointment only between 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. Payment is taken over the phone and due at the time an appointment is made. Cat vaccinations and services available for distemper and rabies package is $25, FVRCP $15, rabies 1 year $15, and microchip $25. Dog vaccines and services available are, you're listening to our reading of the Waterloo Courier for June 21st. On IRS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service of the Blind. Now let's have a look at the obituaries.
Waterloo. Karen L. Hill, Borton, 77, of Waterloo, died March 19th at Friendship Village Pavilion from complications of Alzheimer's. Memorials to Cedar Valley Hospice, Cedar Valley Arboretum, or Alzheimer's Association. A family graveside service will be held in Mount Auburn Cemetery. LaPorte City Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. She enjoyed gardening, walking, and exploring the Cedar Valley Nature Trail and spending time with her children and grandchildren. Waterloo. Zola D. Belden Padrill, 86, of Waterloo, died January 17th at the Cedar Valley Hospice Home. She was employed in retail most of her life. Services 10:30 a.m. Thursday, June 25, at Queen of Peace Catholic Church, Waterloo, with interment at St. Heart Cemetery, Volga. Visitation 4 to 7 Wednesday, June 24, at Haggerty Wyckoff Garrett Funeral Service on South Street, where there will be a 4 p.m. rosary. Visitation 1 hour prior to service Thursday at the church. Memorials to Cedar Valley Hospice Home.
Cedar Falls, Robert L., nicknamed Bob, believe it or not, Smith, 61, of Cedar Falls, and formerly Waterloo, died Wednesday, June 17th at Cedar Valley Hospice Home. Graduated Waterloo East in 77, B.A., and a master's in middle school math in 1998 from UNI. Married, retired from Central Middle School in 2015. Coached football, wrestling, track, and field at numerous local schools. Drummer in various classic rock bands in the area. Funeral services 10:30 a.m. Thursday, June 25th at Locke Funeral Home in Waterloo with burial in Garden of Memory Cemetery. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, June 24th at Locke Funeral Home. Bob loved playing and listening to music. He enjoyed spending time on the river, fishing, cars, and the Iowa Hawkeye football and wrestling and Panther wrestling. His children and grandsons meant everything to him. Bob would travel the state to watch his children's wrestling and volleyball tournaments when they were younger.
Waterloo. Nathan Michael Featherston, 19, of Waterloo, died Monday, June 15th, due to accidental drowning in the Mississippi River. He worked at the Ainsboro Pizza Hut. Services 1 p.m. June 27th at Prairie Lakes Church in Cedar Falls, with burial in Garden of Memory Cemetery in Waterloo. Visitation will place 1 hour prior to the service. He built his first computer during his sophomore year in high school. He enjoyed playing video games, specifically PC games and virtual reality systems. Nathan attended Prairie Lakes Church with his family. He loved being a big brother and hanging out with friends.
Cedar Falls, Sharon K. Strabola, 76 of Cedar Falls, died Thursday, June 18th at Unity Point Allen. Let's see, employed as a receptionist and bookkeeper with Safety Clean, retired in 2006, a member of Eagles Club, where she was a bartender. Services, a celebration of life, will be 6 p.m. Monday, tomorrow at the Eagles Club in Cedar Falls, with visitation 4 to 6 p.m. Richardson Funeral Home is in charge, is assisting the family. Memorials directed to the family.
Waterloo, William Bill G. Gales, 70 of Waterloo, died Thursday, June 18th at Cedar Valley Hospice Home. He served in the U.S. Army during the Vietnam conflict. Memorials in lieu of flowers. Memorials to a charity of your choice in Bill's name. Bill was a caretaker for his mother-in-law for 4 years. He was a fan of the Yankees and Packers. He enjoyed hunting, fishing, trapping, pinochle, cribbage, westerns, and scratch-off tickets. He will be missed by Pat, Pete, Paul, Mark, Ellen, and Tony, but most of all, Kathy.
Cloutier, Lori Greiner, formerly Dvorak, 53 of Cloutier, died June 18th at home of cancer. Attended Hawkeye, worked at PAH Mortgage, probably in Waterloo for more than 30 years. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. today, June 21st, of the celebration at 7 p.m. at Schreer Memorial Building. Private celebration of life be held at Prairie Lakes Church in Cedar Falls at 10:30 a.m. tomorrow, followed by burial in Oneida Cemetery in Cloutier. Lori was devoted to having a close relationship with God. Her husband, Craig, and the boys, Blake, Zach, and Adam, brought her great joy. Lori enjoyed spending time with her family and enjoyed the beautiful outdoors God created here on earth.
Janesville, Delaine Sue Griffith, 69 of Janesville, formerly of Cedar Falls and Rhinebeck, died Tuesday, June 16th at Unity Point Hospice in Waterloo of cancer. She was a full-time homemaker. Memorial service 11 a.m. Saturday, June 27th at Richardson Funeral Service in Cedar Falls, with visitation from 9 a.m. until service time. Interment at a later date in Greenwood Cemetery, Cedar Falls. Memorials to the University of Iowa Center for Advancement, Holden Comprehensive Cancer Center. Sue loved reading, enjoyed crafts, country music, and traveling throughout Iowa. Most of all, she enjoyed time with her family and grandchildren. She was a great wife, mother, grandmother, and friend. She will be missed by all that knew her. Cedar Falls, Alberta A. Larson, 80 of Cedar Falls, died Thursday, June 18th at Mercy One Waterloo Medical Center. Services, family graveside service will be held at Buckingham Cemetery, Traer. Arrangements by Locke Funeral Home in Waterloo. Memorials to the family. Cards sent to the funeral home will be forwarded to the family. Alberta faithfully sent encouraging cards and notes to friends and family to provide love, peace, and comfort. Some of her favorite pastimes included playing Scrabble and being an avid fan of the Iowa Hawkeye basketball team.
Shell Rock, Karma Christine Hardy, 41 of Shell Rock, died Wednesday, June 17th at Unity Point Allen. Attended River Hills School in Cedar Falls, graduated in 98, attended day program in North Star for several years. Services, family visitation, 1 to 3 p.m. or 1:30 to 3 p.m. tomorrow at Kaiser Course and Funeral Home in Shell Rock. Graveside services will follow at Linwood Cemetery in Clarksville. She enjoyed listening to music and going for rides in the truck. Karma didn't touch many lives with her words. She had no words, but she touched so many lives with her heart, her innocence, and her purity. Karma is an organ donor through Iowa Donor Network.
Cedar Falls, Eugene Gene Harmon Lund, 93, of Cedar Falls, died Thursday, June 18th, at Cedar Valley Hospice Home in Waterloo. Gene enlisted in the Navy Air Corps, serving for 5 years. Services 11 a.m. Monday, June 22, at St. John Lutheran Church of Cedar Falls. Burial and military honors to follow at Garden of Memories in Waterloo. Visitation is 3 to 5 p.m. today at Dahl Van Hosco Funeral Home of Cedar Falls. Attendees should wear a mask and practice social distancing. Memorials to Cedar Valley Hospice or St. John Lutheran Church or AMVETS Post 49 Honor Guard. Gene was liked by everyone he met. He and Dolly were active members of Democratic Party. Gene enjoyed fishing and hunting with his sons when they were younger and bowling with the Cypress Lounge team. He will be missed by all who knew and loved him.
Eldora Brenda Lee Jones, 51, of Eldora, died Wednesday at Iowa City Veterans Hospital of natural causes. Served in the U.S. Navy, in 87, she enlisted in the Navy and served until 1991. Married, children. Services social distancing will be requested. Visitation 5 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, June 24th, with 5 to 6 p.m. reserved for the elderly at Englekeys Chapel in Grundy Center. Funeral service 10:30 a.m. Thursday, June 25th at the chapel. Visitation 9 a.m. on Thursday. Interment at Washington Township Cemetery, both outside of Morrison, with military honors performed by the Grundy Center American Legion. Memorials to Cedar Bend Humane Society. Brenda deeply cherished spending time with her friends and family, and she enjoyed keeping busy with crafts, including sewing and plastic canvassing. What that's canvassing? I don't know. Canvassing. In October of 19, Brenda moved her mom and best friend to live with him. Brenda will be missed dearly by those who knew and held her dear.
Joan C. Obmanson, Washburn, 87, of Washburn, died at ABCM Rehabilitation Center of Independence on Tuesday, June 16th. She was a homemaker. Services, private family service with burial in Waterloo Cemetery will be at a later date. Block Funeral Home Waterloo is assisting the family. Memorials to the Northeast Iowa Food Bank card sent to the funeral home will be forwarded to the family. Joan enjoyed baking chocolate chip cookies, sewing and mending for her family, and doing crafts. She liked riding in old cars and going on road trips with the early Ford V8 Club.
A celebration of life for Elsie Bergmeister Cantwell, 92, of Waterloo, who passed away April 8th, will be June 27th, 2 to 5 p.m. at Moose Lodge in Washburn. Due to the COVID, feel free to wear face masks. Bring memories with you to share. William R. Clark was born, don't say what town or he's from, born in 1932, passed away June 9th after a lengthy illness of 2 years. Survived by his wife of 64 years. Went to East High School, graduated in 1951. He was in the Air Force and then employed at Waterloo Airport, Waterloo Post Office for 27 years and Sunday School Superintendent for 30 years. Preceded in death by two sons and two grandsons.
Waterloo. Darwin J. Smith, 82, of Waterloo, died Sunday, June 14th at Mercy One Waterloo Medical Center. He was a tool and die maker. Memorial services 11 a.m. Monday, June 22, at Haggerty Wyckoff Garrett Funeral Service on South Street, with interment at St. Joseph Cemetery in Raymond. Visitation will be an hour before service at the funeral home. Due to COVID-19 concerns, face masks are requested for those attending the visitation and service. Memorials to the Iowa Donor Network.
And lastly, cheers, please.
Yes.
Celebration of life for Benjamin Sullivan. It will be this coming Saturday, June 27th, 1 to 4 p.m. in Lofty's Lounge in Evansdale. Luncheon to celebrate and share our favorite memories and our stories, to laugh and to cry and remember a wonderful person who will be greatly missed. That ends the obituaries. Now on to the important things. The comics. Comic strip Blondie. Dagwood is standing behind Mr. Dithers in their office, and Mr. Dithers leaned forward in his blue chair, working on a laptop on his desk, the way it looks. And Dagwood says to Mr. Dithers, did you think of some more creative insults to yell at me? Nope, Mr. Dithers says. I want to apologize for my little rant. Dagwood standing there, kind of taken aback a little bit. Mr. Dithers turns in his chair and faces Dagwood. I just realized I made those mistakes that I blamed on you was my fault after all. Dagwood's got his hands on his hips, facing Mr. Dithers. Mr. Dithers got his hands up around his neck. I suddenly feel guilty for yelling at you in front of everyone, Mr. Dithers says. Next panel. Mr. Dithers is hugging Dagwood around the middle. Mr. Dithers is shorter than Dagwood, anyway. And Mr. Dithers says, what do you say we put this silly episode behind us and move on? Dagwood says, why not take this opportunity to improve your image? Next panel, Dagwood's pointed to the door to the rest of the office. You could march back out there and apologize to me in front of the entire office staff. Mr. Dithers standing there with his arms folded across his chest. I could do that, he says. The last panel, he's standing there with his hands on Dagwood's shoulders and says, facing him, but why would I want to ruin a perfectly good motivational rant? On to Dennis the Menace. Dennis the Menace is coming in the house. His face is kind of black and he looks kind of dirty, and his mother's got the refrigerator door open. Dennis's mother says, what do you want for dinner tonight? Beef or chicken? Then apparently Dennis has washed up a little bit and set on the table. Beef or chicken, he says to himself. He has a picture of a cow and a chicken. They're alive, of course. Next panel, Dennis says, that's a tough one. And he's got a plate of, she's pouring a glass of milk and it looks like a plate of cookies there. Dennis's mother says, or Dennis says, is there any other kind of animal for dinner that doesn't look like beef or taste like chicken? There he is drinking his milk anyway. But thus ends the reading of the cartoons. There's Family Circus and so forth. What do you got?
Letters to the editor about voting. Lolin Mendui, Evansdale. To vote is great responsibility, whether you do it in person or by mail. Everyone should have to be registered and have a proper ID, either a valid driver's license or state-issued ID. The way to stop fraud is to put these safeguards in place. To vote means you're legal citizens of this country. I can't cash a check without an ID. We spend millions of dollars on many different programs to do this, and get a card for all eligible voters would be minimal compared to other programs that have been implemented. If you're against this, then you really don't care. You just want to complain and not fix the problems that do exist. Another letter to the editor. Patient Zero, Justin Weber, Eldora. I want to commend Unity Point Health, Allen Hospital staff for their professionalism, compassion, and encouragement during my 55-day recovery from COVID-19 as a patient zero. From ICU teams, respiratory teams, nurses, techs, therapists, all the way to the kitchen staff, who made a nearly two-month-long quarantine recovery more bearable. Thanks to Allen Hospital staff, my life has been extended and I will be forever grateful. All I can say is thank you and heal on. Another one, family thank you. Tamara Dahlgren, Leawood, Kansas. My father passed away June 5 and was laid to rest June 10th. I want to thank the City of Waterloo and its kind residents and the police department who escorted the funeral procession and touched our hearts last Wednesday. To those residents who kindly pulled over as the hearse and family passed by, to the DOT truck driver who pulled onto the side of the road on Highway 21 and placed his hat over his heart, I want to tell you how much my family appreciates your thoughtfulness. You may not know us, but we will forever remember you and the sympathy you expressed to us with your small gesture. With sincere thanks, the family of West Scones.
Quote of the week is by Latanya Graves, NCAA NCAACP of Blackhawk County president on the virtual Juneteenth live videos last week. She says, "We celebrate Juneteenth because of the different atrocities that were committed against the slaves, and we want to continue with the celebration to honor our ancestors that were enslaved. Onward to the marriages and disillusions, or some of them." Caleb A. Wandschneider and Jaden A. Hemmings, both of Ames, were married June 12th. On June 13th, the rest of these are all June 13th, Terry T. Townsend and Dianth R. Jones, both of Waterloo, Jordan P. Rockwell and Megan N. Buswitz, both of Cedar Falls, Luke J. Schoonover and Amanda M. Vonhagen, both of Waterloo, George S. Bowser and Lindsay R. Harkrider, both of Waterloo, also married June 13th, Eric M. Dilley and Delaney L. McKibben, both of Cedar Falls, are married that same date. And lastly, Gregory R. Kent and Africa D. Nielsen, also married June 13th. Among the disillusions are Catherine Rose Thompson and David G. Glesner, Casey Aiden Warren and Corrine Ann Warren, Carrie Ann Donoso and Alonzo Ramon, and Christopher Lee and Sonia L. Yetter Akola were disillusioned. That being that, let's see. Probably read that earlier, so we don't need to do that again. Grundy County Fair is still on for July. Virtual field day on weed control. We have Organic Farmers of Iowa going to be out there. Time, what do you have?
Call the courier.
Time,
yes, it is.
What do we have for time, then?
It's time. Here. Can a business charge a 4% service charge for using a credit card? They can, unless it's otherwise forbidden by state law, and Iowa law does not forbid it.
Why would you print such a horrible cartoon in your paper June 14th about defunding police and showing police beating up people? You guys are so extreme left, it's unbelievable.
The caller is apparently unaware of the ongoing national debate about the need for police reform in the United States in the wake of the Memorial Day killing of George Floyd by a Minneapolis police officer. One feature of the coverage of the protests has been the countless videos of police beating, as well as using tear gas, pepper spray, and rubber bullets against peaceful protesters. A compilation of videotaped incidents by a North Carolina lawyer contained more than 300 clips by June 5. We believe opposition to police brutality is a bipartisan issue. Apparently, the Iowa legislature and many police departments, including Waterloo's, agree, as evidenced by new laws and policies meant to curb police use of force. Right there.
We reached out to, let's see, why didn't the graduation edition insert on Sunday, June 14th, include Appleton-Parkersburg?
We reached out to the school's administration several times, and they did not respond. A dear friend of mine died in Waterloo Monday from COVID at the age of 47. He went in for sore throat and body aches 6 days prior, then died very quickly. No pre-existing conditions. How many people could you say have died of COVID in Waterloo within the last month? Health officials don't break out the number of people who died within a city, but within Blackhawk County. There were 31 people who had died of COVID-19 by May 16th, and as there have been 59 deaths as of June 20th, according to the County Health Department, that's 25 people who have died in the last month.
What happened to the Sunnyside South housing development?
It was delayed due to a 6-year legal battle that involved multiple rulings by the Iowa Supreme Court and forced the city to redo the land sale. The owners still intend to develop the site.
If I owned a business and rioters came along and destroyed it, can I sue the city for not protecting my business?
You can sue whomever you want, but you should first consult a lawyer to discuss your particular situation and the odds your claim would actually be successful if it went before a judge or jury.
When leisure services list parks, they do not list Castle Bluffs. Why is that?
We went to the Waterloo Leisure Service website, and Castle Bluffs Park was clearly listed among other city parks.
Why are so many trees being cut down along East Lone Road going south down Leversey Road?
The city of Waterloo is clearing trees on the airport property to be developed into an industrial park known as Waterloo Air and Rail Park.
The things you learn on Google, things I learned while Googling something else. And this is by Fred Abram, the UNI professor, former head of economics at UNI. This is his opinion only. Things I learned while Googling something else, Women and Men by Josh McElroy at 850,000 words and almost 1,200 pages, probably the longest American novel ever written. I wonder how many ninth graders have done last-minute book reports on it. The video game Donkey Kong got its name because the Japanese creator believed donkey meant stupid in English and wanted to convey the impression that the character was a stupid ape. Oh, donkey and kings are unrelated. Snails have 14,000 teeth, and some can even kill you. Fortunately, you can probably outrun them. Next, tigers have striped skin, not just striped fur. These stripes are like fingerprints, and no two tigers have the same pattern, just like snowflakes. I didn't know that. Sinister is the Latin word for left-handed. Probably explains why great left-handed Dodger pitcher Sandy Koufax struck out so many batters. Next, the most popular item at Walmart is bananas. They sell more bananas than any other single item they have in stock. It says, what, many for Dairy Queen splits. I suppose banana splits. Okay, as of 1998, over 50% of Iceland's population believed in the existence of elves. Probably helps explain why nobody else would want to live there. Next, some banks have their therapists known as wealth psychologists who help ultra-rich clients who are unable to mentally cope with their immense wealth. I will never need one. In Japan, you're equally likely to die from being struck by lightning as you are from being shot by a gun. In America, gun deaths are 795 times greater than lightning deaths. Let that sink in again a little bit. The brain is our fattest organ, being composed of nearly 60% fat. Gives new meaning to the term fathead. In September of 2007, a guy named Kevin Shelley broke 46 wooden toilet seats with his head in 1 minute to create a world record. That's great. No additional comment necessary. Where are you going to sit? Shoe stores used x-ray machines to measure how well shoes fit in the 1940s before the wrists of x-ray. I remember that, but fully understood. I remember looking into the eyepiece and seeing my green foot and bones. Airlines sell their unclaimed luggage to a store in Scottsboro, Alabama, that resells everything. Check them for your lost bag. There is a Darth Vader grotesque as part of the National Cathedral's rain control system. The grotesques deflect rainwater by bouncing it off of them and away from the stone walls. It's their destiny. A highway in Lancaster, California plays the William Tell Overture. As you drive over it, thanks to some well-placed grooves in the road. The Lone Ranger doesn't use the road. And next to last, the future birthplace of Star Trek's Captain Kirk is Riverside, Iowa. We knew that. Wouldn't it be cool if Mr. Spock would be born in Prosper, Iowa? 1754, Horace Mann first coined the word serendipity, which means finding something good while looking for something else. How is that for dying all of this? That's about enough of us. Today's reading of the Waterloo Courier for Sunday, June 21st. Eunice and Thomas Pynchonot here have attempted to convey some of the things we've read. The recording of today's reading will be on the website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening to our 1 p.m. reading today of the Waterloo Courier.